You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good afternoon. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom this afternoon, I am Carl Frisch, syndicated columnist, Democratic strategist at Bullfight Strategies here in Washington, D.C. We've got a good show lined up for you. First, before we begin, I want to read some text from the show. Let's see here. By the way, you can find more about me at carlfrisch.com and connect with me on Twitter and Facebook at Carl Frisch. That's K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H. Like I said, before we get going today, I know many of you out there have been wondering where Tom is, and I wanted to take this opportunity to bring you up to speed. Tom had a simple abdominal surgery scheduled for and performed on the first week of his August vacation. It seemed to go well. Unfortunately, the next week, something inside popped, which turned into a four-day return to the hospital through the ER to get fixed. He's now on the mend, and it looks everything looks good. But his one-and-a-half-week summer vacation is going to run a week or so longer than planned. When he's back on the air, he'll tell you about his adventures with the American healthcare system. So look forward to that. And if you'd like to send him a message of your well wishes, you can do so at tomhartman.com, as always. All right, let's get on with the show. And what a great show we have lined up for you today. Joining us this hour, we've got my good friend and the always sexy liberal, Stephanie Miller, host of the nationally syndicated Stephanie Miller Show, which is also simulcast on Current TV. We've also got the nation's John Nichols, an expert when it comes to Wisconsin politics, to discuss the latest Paul Ryan news. All right, let's get on with the show. Joining me now from her bunker in Los Angeles, California, Stephanie Miller. Hey, Stephanie.
Oh, my God. Carl Frisch, I love your work on the Stephanie Miller Show. I think you're fabulous.
Ding. I would play the ding sound. But so how are things going?
This is weird. I feel like we're in the wrong position.
I know. I have half a mind to put you in a sidecar of some sort. So
you've got a control freak. All right.
You've got a great post up on your blog at current.com, the 7 fun facts about Paul Ryan. I just wanted to read a couple for people. He has given away more copies of Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged as Christmas presents. These are more popular than his usual gifts, which are lumps of coal. Do you get the sense that Republican operatives out there feel like the Paul Ryan selection is a lump of coal for their own party?
I sense the sheer white-knuckled panic that makes you and I so giggly.
Oh, man, I have never been more excited about a Republican ticket than I don't know when.
Yeah, who was I reading that behind? I think it's a Politico piece about behind closed doors. I mean, Republicans are seriously nervous and are seriously like saying there's a slight chance this could be good and a really, really large chance it's going to be a disaster.
Well, a disaster of epic proportions. I mean, I don't know when the last time this happened where, in all likelihood, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan will lose their home states. And I mean both of Mitt Romney's home states, Michigan and Massachusetts, and Paul Ryan losing Wisconsin. It's kind of unprecedented.
I read today about Ohio that they think that they could have just lost Ohio, and certainly Florida, you know, when you look at the number of seniors, obviously.
You think that my favorite bit of political spin coming out of this was, so they've got this big rollout tour of the ticket, and it includes a bus trip through Florida, which conspicuously is absent of Paul Ryan, and yet their campaign spokesperson said it has nothing to do with his stance on Medicare. What do you make of that?
I think they were afraid it would be like the scene out of Frankenstein. Angry mobs with torches.
One hand on the walker, one hand on the torch.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're right. It's one of those things where people like you and I are like, oh my God, you're effing kidding me, right?
I mean, how many years have you been talking about Eddie Munster? I mean, Paul Ryan on your show.
Yeah. How quickly did Eddie Munster start trending immediately when this was announced? Carl, you know, because you've been doing campaigns forever. I mean, Kathy Hochul, that was only one race, but that's my home state. I mean, that's my home right near where I grew up in Buffalo. A Democrat hasn't won that seat in how long? And that they weren't even taking her seriously. And then came Paul Ryan.
Right. I mean, this budget of his, Right. You've got one of the things that came out of that Politico story is the number of Republicans in Congress who are now petrified about the votes they cast in favor of the Ryan budget. And by some counts, Mitt Romney, who is now trying to distance himself from Paul Ryan's Medicare overhaul, basically turning, I heard this joke on your show, I thought it was pretty funny, basically turning Medicare into the, you know, government equivalent of those Bed Bath & Beyond coupons you get in the mail every week.
Right.
You've got them now distancing themselves, even though he said he would sign it into law on day one. He'd be very busy.
And called it marvelous, don't forget, which is a word that everyday guys use all the time.
Well, I mean, he particularly likes to use it when watching sport with his friends who are fans of sport.
Yes, yes, it's marvelous.
So in, by some counts, he's now had five positions on the Ryan budget and the Medicare overhaul. I imagine that number is going to increase, right?
Well, absolutely. And why would you pick him? Why would you pick him if you're going to then distance yourself from? I mean, the whole thing is so hilarious already. I mean, I love that they both got heckled already the first day out, like yesterday.
Well, I think the heckling is going to continue, and it might be the first time in modern political history that a candidate for president has less on paper about what he'd do for the country than his running mate.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. That's the beauty in it, right? Is that Romney has declined to give any details on anything, any of his policies, and now you couldn't have a more detailed plan from Ryan. It's like, okay, thanks for filling in the blanks.
Right, what they lack in detail, they've got in spades when it comes to branding. I mean, I was slightly nauseated having to listen to the way that they were describing the Paul Ryan selection of, you know, his youthful vigor, and he's a gym rat, and he's a fitness nut who does P90X. He even listens to Nirvana.
He likes a heavy metal, and who cares?
Well, it reminded me a bit, you know, I'm a former Republican, and it reminded me a bit in 96 when they picked Jack Kemp to be Bob Dole's running mate. I was in San Diego at the Republican convention, and they had this little rally for young people because they thought Jack Kemp in his 60s was going to appeal to young people. And they had signs that said, Kemp is the dude.
Oh, yeah, because that's how the kids are talking.
Right.
Yeah, well, this is what offends me about, you know, already the, he's going to get the women vote because he's got those dreamy bedroom eyes. Like, what? Those zombie eyes?
Well,
it's gotten even scarier. As you know, he's against abortion, even in cases of rape or incest. I mean, he is so far.
And he's against birth control. I mean, this guy is the Benjamin Button of American politics. He's a 75-year-old man in a young man's body. He only possesses the positions of the octogenarian Republican class.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, exactly. No, I mean, I literally, it's like he looks like Eddie Munster, but it's like going back to a series that started earlier in the 50s, perhaps, not even.
Yeah. Ozzie and Harriet on the public dole would be so lucky.
No, I mean, in some ways, I just think, we were talking about Bill Kristol, that this was his idea, and of course, Bill Kristol, who's always been wrong about everything ever in the history of anything.
Oh, he's got so many good ideas, that Bill Kristol, but before we let you go.
You're like, is he working for us? Because this is just
his crystal ball is faulty at best. Before we let you go, I want to mention that next month, Current Television is going to have a documentary about the Sexy Liberal Tour, and on October 27th, you're going to be in New York for Sexy Liberal, right?
I'm going to Broadway, and just for one night,
the great Broadway.
Dope.
Well, you can find more from Stephanie and the Sexy Liberal Tour online at sexyliberal.com, and go to Ticketmaster to get your tickets for October 27th at the Beacon Theater.
Woo-hoo!
Stephanie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, honey.
All righty, I'll talk to you on Thursday. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, more on Paul Ryan with John Nichols from The Nation. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. If you're just joining us, we just finished up with Stephanie Miller talking to her about Paul Ryan and the Sexy Liberal Tour, which is coming to New York City at the Beacon Theater on October 27th. Check it out.
fresh from their star-studded performance in Hollywood.
They drummed you right out of Hollywood.
The year's hottest political show, the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour, is finally coming to the city that never sleeps, New York.
So you come crawling back to Broadway. Well, Broadway doesn't go for booze and dope.
On October 27th, the eve of Election 2012, the Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour will take the stage at Broadway's world-famous Beacon Theater.
There is nothing like the thrill of doing a live show on Broadway.
Featuring John Fugelsang, Hal Sparks, Aisha Tyler,
Sexy Lady,
and Stephanie Miller. For tickets, go to Ticketmaster.com or call 866-858-0008. Don't miss your one and only chance to see all the Sexy Liberal Comedy Players live on one stage. That's the Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour at the Beacon Theater.
I love New York. You know why? Because it's open all night.
So be sure to go get your tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Check out SexyLiberal.com for details. You know, it struck me as interesting when I heard the slogan that the Romney-Ryan ticket is now using for their campaign to take over the White House. They're saying that they are America's comeback team. I'm not kidding. I have to agree with them. They are. They are America's comeback team, because if they get elected, they're going to come back for your Social Security. They're going to come back for your Medicare. They're going to come back for your jobs. They're going to come back for your pensions. They're going to come back for your public schools. They're going to come back to finish off the Postal Service, and on and on and on. But I want to know what you think a more appropriate slogan for the Romney-Ryan ticket might be. I like the idea of Romney-Ryan reverse. It plays nicely off of President Obama and Joe Biden's slogan, forward. Give us a call toll-free, 866-987-TOM. That's 866-987-8466. Chris in Seattle, what do you think the Romney-Ryan ticket should be using as a slogan?
Well, I'm not sure that. I do like the one you came up with. I just was, when on Friday when he released, I thought that this was going to be his pick. I thought it was the biggest political gaffe I've seen in a long time.
Even bigger than the Olympics, right?
Yeah. Yes, because, I mean, you want to kill a story on a Friday. You release a story on a Friday if you want to kill it.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
the thing is that
how do you think all those poor saps that downloaded that Romney-Ryan or that Romney campaign mobile app to find be the first to know who the running mate felt?
Well, but I think the reason he did it and the reason he picked Ryan was because the issue of the taxes, where the media was actually finally starting
right.
to lock onto this. Pressure was starting to come, and he needed to get everybody's attention away from the taxes, because there's something in there that if it comes out, I mean, he does not want it. The pressure he was getting even from his own side, but this took everybody's attention off of that. But now everybody's talking about Ryan and who he is.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, if you think about it for just a second, this has been an awful summer for Mitt Romney. Not only did he gaffe his way abroad across his trip in the UK and in Poland and in Israel, but his polling was falling, dramatically falling. I mean, you even had Barack Obama beating Mitt Romney in a Fox News poll by almost double digits. So he needed to do something. And the incessant talk about his taxes, the rightful discussion about why he is hiding this information. And remember, it's not just about his taxes. This guy is lacking in transparency throughout his entire life. His staff scrubbed the computers at the governor's office in Massachusetts. And we still don't have the records related to the Olympic Games in Utah. So we need to keep focusing on that. I mean, I find it particularly funny that his own vetting of Paul Ryan would require Paul Ryan to turn over years' worth of his taxes, but that we will only be getting 2 years of Paul Ryan's taxes. This is something we need to get to the bottom of, and we cannot let up on it, because if we stop talking about it, it's just going to go away. We can't trust the media to keep the pressure on. Let's go to Al in Las Vegas. Do you have an idea for a slogan you'd like to hear from the Romney-Ryan ticket? Something more appropriate?
But I couldn't say it on television. I have a question for you.
Yes.
Well, actually, it's the trickle-down on your back.
No, that's good. That's good.
Okay, here's my question. If they get their way with the Romney plan and the Ryan plan, and they voucher out Social Security, what's going to happen to the $2.6 trillion reserve that Social Security has? Are they going to raid it again like they always do?
Of course they are. Al, The only reason, let's remember our history here. Republicans opposed Social Security. Republicans opposed Medicare. Republicans have opposed Obamacare. Historically, they voted against these things. And now they want to basically privatize them, which means they want to give the money that's sitting there in the government to fund these things away to private corporations. If you think that there's any kind of a lockbox holding that money so that the people who need it can use it, if you don't think Republicans would go in and give that away to corporate America, then you haven't been watching this Republican Congress, because that's all they're interested in doing. They want to privatize the Postal Service. They want to privatize all prisons. They want to privatize our public schools. And they won't stop until big business runs everything. They're the people that bankroll their efforts. And it's a frightening prospect. And remember, Paul Ryan is a hypocrite when it comes to these issues. Tragically, his father died when he was 16 years old. I can't imagine what it's like to live through something like that. And he received Social Security, survivor benefits, that came as a result of his father's passing. And he used that money to go to college. I think that's great. He got off to a good start and has a tremendous career now. But he would destroy the program that gave him his opportunities life. And that's what the Republican Party is today. It's sad and it's sick. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in, I'm Carl Frisch, and we will be back after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, John Nichols from The Nation. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom all afternoon. I am Carl Frisch, Democratic strategist, syndicated columnist. More about me at carlfrisch.com. And actually, I don't know if you know this. You probably don't. But I have been nominated by the Washington Blade in the 2012 Best of Gay DC as Washington's best LGBT television personality. So if you agree with them, you can go to my Facebook, facebook.com/Carl Frisch, and find information about how you can vote for me, and we'll see if I end up winning. Who knows? One thing's for sure, I think the possibility of the Romney-Ryan ticket pulling this thing off is getting dimmer and dimmer, which means that we have to keep the pressure on. We can't do what we've done in the past, and just because we think we're going to win, that we can rest on our laurels. Republicans won't do that, and we can't do it either. I want to know what you think the Romney-Ryan slogan should be. I like Romney-Ryan reverse, but let me know what you think it should be. 866-987-8466. Joining me now to chat about the Ryan selection and a bit about Wisconsin, he's an expert when it comes to Wisconsin politics, among many other things, is the Washington correspondent for The Nation, John Nichols. Hey, John, how are you?
Yeah, I think you got to shut down the contest for the slogan. I think you hit on it without knowing.
Well, I mean, they keep on saying that they want to, you know, that they're America's comeback team. And I keep saying, yeah, they'll come back for your Social Security. They'll come back for your Medicare. They'll come back for your jobs and your schools and everything else they can get their hands on.
No, they're coming back to 1858. but no, I think you hit on it. Yeah, I think you've got the slogan. You just aren't, you're not embracing it.
Romney, Ryan, reverse.
Nope. Dim and dimmer.
Dim and dimmer. Very nice.
I mean, with all due respect, Paul Ryan is supposedly the smartest guy in the room, right?
Yeah, it's a very small room, though.
Intellectual leader of the Republican Party.
Right.
The brains of one of the oldest political parties on the planet. The guy who puts the IQ, the I and the Q, in the word Republican.
Right.
And so what happens when they send him to the Iowa State Fair?
Oh, that was fascinating.
Now, Kyle, you, I have recently learned, are Washington, D.C.'s hottest gay TV personality. So I don't think of you necessarily as, you know, a natural expert on things Iowa.
But I've been to the Iowa State Fair four or five times.
You've seen the butter sculpture?
I've seen many butter sculptures, and I've had way too many things fried that shouldn't be fried.
Fried butter.
I've had fried butter, fried Coca-Cola, fried Twinkies, the whole works.
Can't do better. I mean, it's a genius event.
Yeah.
So, here's the deal. I still don't give you any credibility at all on expertise on things I want. I'm just not going to give it to you.
Right.
So I'm going to say to you, though, you, as a non-expert, if I'm sending you to the Iowa State Fair, what do you study up on?
Maybe agriculture?
Farm policy?
Farm policy, agriculture, yeah.
Yeah. So when you get a question from somebody as you're walking around the Iowa State Fair, you don't say, oh, no policy stuff today. I want to enjoy the fair.
Right. You didn't realize this is his vacation time, right?
What the heck was that? I mean, I was like, I'm listening to that, and I'm thinking, nobody in the history of American politics ever has gone to the Iowa State Fair unprepared to do farm questions.
Oh, of course not. I mean, this is what Republican candidates, Democratic candidates live for, is going to the state fair in Iowa to do that. Usually during the primaries, but you know when, or during the caucuses. But what was fascinating to me is that you wouldn't expect somebody like Paul Ryan to shrug off those kinds of questions. You know who you would expect it from? Mitt Romney. You think Romney's rubbing off on Paul Ryan?
Well, that's what I mean. It's sort of like it's the dim and dimmer. You know, I mean, we all joked about the notion that he was the smartest guy in a very small room. You know that. In the kingdom of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, all that stuff. Well, you know what? It might be true. Because his appearance at the Iowa State Fair, which is, you know, I mean, it's sort of like the easiest walkthrough you could do in American politics.
It's a great state fair. So
it was a bumble.
It was an abysmal first showing in Iowa. That's for darn sure. Stark contrast to President Obama's tour of the state.
But the other part of it, yeah, Obama had, you know, but Obama knows how to do Iowa. He used to live there, you know, for like all of 2007. But the other thing about the state fair, which I thought was sort of like, just kind of tells us a little more about Paul Ryan than you really want to know. So there's people that are yelling stuff.
Right.
There's folks yelling things at him, right? From Iowa CCI. Now, I know Iowa CCI quite well. It's a great activist group out there.
Right.
And what's wonderful about Iowa CCI is that they bring together rural farm families from rural Iowa and African Americans from Des Moines.
Right.
And they work together. They can actually sit in the same rooms. They come up with policy. It's a beautiful thing. Well, they were all out there at the Iowa State Fair, and they were yelling some stuff about, you know, tell us about Medicare and stuff like that to Ryan. And what was Ryan's reaction?
What's that?
You guys mustn't be from Iowa. You know, these women aren't from Iowa. Well, first off, they were from Iowa. But secondly, what was it about them that made him think they weren't Iowans?
Oh, geez.
Think about it.
I can't put my finger on it. The fact that they're African American, perhaps?
Or that they, you know, in general, just don't, I don't know, they didn't have that Iowa look he was expecting. I mean,
This is something you actually touch on in a piece that you've got up at The Nation on your blog. You know, he's from Janesville, which is a pretty Democratic city. And yet when they went to, you know, do their homecoming, you know, little swing state tour of Wisconsin, they didn't go to his hometown. They went to the Republican stronghold, right?
Yeah. So when did you ever hear this happening? Like what if Sarah Palin, after they picked her for vice president, you know, she went to, instead of going to Wasilla, she went to Sitka.
Right.
You know, I mean, she's like, and then she said, and she got up there and said, it's great to be home.
Yeah. No, you know, it's
well,
ridiculous.
Actually, your home is 62 miles away. You're not at home. You're in this incredible thing.
Well, I mean, in Wisconsin.
Wasn't even in his congressional district.
Well, in Wisconsin, you know, they picked the crowd they wanted, a very Republican crowd. Maybe he was expecting a similar crowd in Iowa.
Maybe. I don't know. But I mean, what kind of prep was that? Because, you know, that's the same place where Romney was challenged on the, and he came up with the corporations are people too.
Right.
The exact same spot. They should have said, you know, things get a little shaky.
Well, you know, the Romney-Ryan ticket, you know, has been well known for their advance skills, you know, making sure that things are prepped for public events. I'm reminded of the Olympic Games, for example, in London.
You know, your point is awfully well taken. Perhaps you are correct.
Money can't buy you good advance, apparently.
But all I'm saying is that you know, it just strikes me that Paul Ryan is somebody who is just out of privilege, who his father did pass away, which is very sad and you know, something to take seriously. But when his father passed away, he sort of was mentored by his father's former law partner, who was also at one point the chairman of the state Republican
Party. Right.
He comes out of college. He immediately has a job in Washington, D.C.
College paid for by Social Security survivor benefits.
I really think that just paid for the beer. But he immediately comes out of college, goes to Washington, D.C.
And works for, you know, let's remember, this is in the very early 90s. He works for, at the time, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, anti-gay bigots in the Senate, Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas.
Right. And then before that, though, he worked for Bob Caston.
Right.
Who was a really shady kind of banker, you know, kind of like basically during the period of Bob Caston's time in the U.S. Senate, the bank lobby didn't have to hire lobbyists. they just let him do the
right.
job. And so it goes out to Washington. And then, you know, he does the Washington thing for a while. Congressional seat comes open. All of his corporate and GOP buddies clear the way. He doesn't have a primary. He's got an easy general election. He was in charge of redistricting for Wisconsin. He got to draw his own district. And so here's a guy, with all due respect, who's never really had all that tough a road up politically.
Well, and you know,
and
you've heard the media, chattering class wondering how somebody so conservative could keep a district that's so 50-50. Well, that's why.
Yeah, he did draw the district. And
right.
The other thing, there's another element to it, though. It's a very important subtlety of that district, which you'll understand, your listeners will, because they're so smart. The district is made up of small towns, vast rural areas, and then smaller manufacturing communities.
Right.
And none of them has a major TV market, and there's no Metro Daily, that serves the region.
Right.
And so...
You end up with
fly under radar.
Yeah, you end up with newspapers that typically print press releases as news stories.
And even some of them that are pretty good, but the problem is none of them cover the whole district. So even if somebody is doing a good job covering Paul Ryan one year,
other people aren't going to find out about it. Can you stick around for the next segment?
Sure.
All right, we're talking to John Nichols from The Nation about Paul Ryan and the Wisconsin connection there. You know, what it was like in Janesville. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, more about the life and times of Eddie Munster. I mean, Paul Ryan.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program with guest host Carl Frisch. Connect with him on Twitter at Carl Frisch and visit CarlFrisch.com for more information. Don't make
me a target. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom all afternoon. I am Carl Frisch. We've got 10 minutes at the bottom of the hour. We are chatting with the Washington correspondent for The Nation, John Nichols. John, thanks for sticking around.
It's good to be with you. I mean, what am I going to pass up a chance to talk to the hottest gay TV personality in Washington, D.C.?
All right. So if you're wondering why John Nichols is flirting with me on the radio, you can go vote for me. I've been nominated by the Washington Blade as the best LGBT television personality.
I'm doing everything I can to get
in D.C.
That,
go to Facebook.com/Carl Frisch for more information. It's right there at the top of the page. And you should go to The Nation and read this blog post from John Nichols that kind of talks about the problem with progressives that in Wisconsin that Paul Ryan has, right?
Yeah, like him. He does not like progressives, man. And so, you know, the funny thing about it is I realize that conservatives don't like liberals, right? They don't get along, and liberals, frankly, you know, don't have a lot of love for conservatives. It's, I know, it's a back and forth. But what's a little unsettling is that Paul Ryan has a highly developed theory of his disdain for progressives. You know what I mean? It's like and a stated desire. Imagine this. He says flat out, he agrees with Glenn Beck, progressivism is a cancer, and that his work, you know, presumably his chairmanship of the budget committee, his congressional service, all that, now his vice presidential candidacy, is really dedicated to fleshing progressives out into the open so that we can take them down.
Well, it's all beginning to make sense then. I mean, if he thinks progressives are a cancer on America, and he doesn't support Obamacare because, you know, pre-existing conditions and everything, he just wants us all to die.
Well, there's a one component of it, though. But, I mean, let's think about this this cancer. What are the manifestations of this disease? How do you know you've got it?
Right.
Well, if you're an old person and you know, you get a Social Security check, that's a manifestation of progressive cancer. If you get sick and you get Medicare or Medicaid, that's a manifestation of the progressive cancer. If you're a kid and you go to a public school, public education is a manifestation of the progressive cancer. You get my picture here?
I do.
The things that he sees as cancerous, as, you know, something that could kill you, something just horrible, I think are the things that most Americans see as the signs of a healthy republic.
Well, you know, it shows the levels of, it shows where he comes from as a politician, too. You don't get to be a 42-year-old with national prominence in the Republican Party unless the fringe base is in love with you. And there's no way to get the fringe base on your side unless you say stupid crap like that.
And you go on Glenn Beck's show to say it.
Right.
You know, and the best part is I really recommend, I link on the piece to the Glenn Beck program. And I don't think, and Carl, I want you to make a note of this, I believe it's the first time on national radio I've ever recommended that people listen to Glenn Beck. but I really recommend that people go check it out. Check out the video. Because as Paul Ryan is saying some of this stuff, Glenn Beck says audibly, clearly, I love you.
Frightening. Absolutely frightening.
It isn't a sexual thing. It is, seriously, it is just that he's so agrees with Paul Ryan that he literally says in the midst of the interview, I love you.
Well, I mean, he strikes me then as kind of one of these Yaffe-type young conservatives who's extreme to the hilt on every issue.
That was such an obscure reference. That
well, Yaffe is Young Americans for Freedom. They are, if you think college Republicans are conservative, these people are near fascist.
These are the people, they actually got their, like, alumni to help them to buy the Reagan Ranch.
Right.
And so they gather at the Reagan Ranch. And the interesting thing about Paul Ryan is, you know, this is a fascinating thing. He is a top-to-bottom conservative. I mean, this is the purest mainstream, you know, on every issue conservative who's ever been nominated for a national ticket, ever.
Right.
You know, Reagan deviated on all kinds of things.
He deviated while governing in all kinds of ways, too.
Yeah, this guy doesn't deviate. He's up and down. But I want to suggest something to you. I don't think he's a conservative. I don't think that conservatism is his driving force. Because the modern conservative movement is not conservative. There's magazine, the American Conservative, is actually very much at odds with it. I think he's corporate.
Absolutely a corporatist.
I'll tell you why and where it comes out. He's a deficit hawk, right? He's a guy who doesn't like big spending, doesn't like big government. And yet, every one of his default positions takes him back to what Wall Street wants. And so when Wall Street says, oh, we got to bail out the banks through TARP, he's like, oh, I hate this, but I'm for that. Got to bail out the auto industry. Ah, I hate it, but I'm for that. We got to do Medicare Part D in a way that moves huge amounts of money into the pharmaceutical companies. I'm for that, even though the CBO says it's going to, you know, bust the budget. We got to do two unfunded wars, stream huge amounts of money to the military industrial complex. Okay, gotta do that.
So when he loses as the vice presidential running mate, unlike Palin, who had to relegate herself to reality television and book deals and paid speeches, Ryan can either stay a junior member of the House of Representatives, no longer as budget chairman because he's termed out at the end of this Congress, or do you think he's likely to end up on Wall Street?
Well, here's the interesting thing. I mean, his confidence in the ticket is so intense, so incredible, that he isn't giving up his house seat. Right? He's
right.
going to run for both. But, you know, no, he'll stay in Congress. He won't go to Wall Street. This guy doesn't need money. His, you know, his disclosure forms say he's worth up to $7.8 million. He comes from a very wealthy family.
A wealthy family who made their money building freeways and highways under Eisenhower.
Yeah. And his wife is an Oklahoma energy industry family. And so, I mean,
they're loaded to the gills. John Nichols, we're going to have to leave it there. I appreciate you coming on today. John Nichols from The Nation. Follow him at Nichols Uprising on Twitter and check out his work at TheNation.com. This is the Tom Hartman Program. In the next hour, we're talking to Brad Woodhouse, Communications Director for the Democratic National Committee. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. All afternoon, filling in for Tom today, I am Carl Frisch, syndicated columnist, Democratic strategist. More about me at carlfrisch.com, where you can sign up for my email list for updates and connect with me on Facebook and Twitter at Carl Frisch. We are chatting about Paul Ryan, the man who could be a heartbeat away from the presidency. I'm sorry to frighten you so much with that information. Joining us now to chat more about that fact is Brad Woodhouse. He is the communications director for the Democratic National Committee, better known as the Democratic Party. Brad, thanks for joining us.
Carl, thanks for having me, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, but Mitt Romney, not so much, right?
Well, I don't know. I think he's had a real rough go of it since he announced Paul Ryan.
Exhausting.
Well, yeah, it was so bad he was exhausted in Florida and had to cancel a campaign appearance. And he obviously probably made the right decision, went to Florida without Paul Ryan everywhere he traveled in Florida.
I wanted to mention that. I wanted to mention that. You and I, you work in the press world as a guy that communicates the Democratic message to reporters. I've done the same thing at the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee in my past. Have you ever heard more pathetic spin from a campaign when they announced that Paul Ryan would not be part of the bus trip through Florida the week of his announcement, when the Romney campaign said, oh, Ryan's not going to be there, but it's not because of Medicare?
Well, it was pathetic. I guess they had to say something, but clearly Romney went to Florida. He was dogged by this Medicare issue.
Giant headlines on every daily in the state.
That's right. Every major newspaper in the state. Medicare is a huge issue. Medicare overshadows Romney trip. I don't know what the thinking was by picking Paul Ryan. It's like Jim Messina said, there's why the hell they picked this guy, but you know what? It's good that they did, because it really does clarify the choice in this election. Now, I don't think it changes things a lot. Romney'd already adopted the Ryan approach. He'd already adopted.
He's going to sign it into law on day one.
That's right. That's right. And he was going to sign it into law. Now one day the campaign is putting out talking points to distance themselves from the Ryan budget. The next day, they're embracing it. He previously said he would sign it into law. So, you know, whatever good they think they're getting out of the Ryan pick, you know, God bless them. But they've really clarified the choice. I mean, in Medicare to fund more tax breaks for Mitt Romney.
Yeah, Mitt Romney, by some calculations, would pay as little as 1% in taxes
under the Ryan plan. I mean, if you didn't think that Mitt Romney's approach to taxes and Medicare was radical enough, just, you know, now you have Paul Ryan. I mean, just to make it even more even more extreme, a tax rate of nearly zero for Mitt Romney, tax increases, much like Romney's plan for the middle class. I mean, Carl, I don't know how in the devil anyone goes into an election and says, hey, let's increase taxes on the middle class so people like Mitt Romney can get a tax break and put together a majority, and win 270 electoral votes. God bless them for trying, but I just don't believe that's going to fly with the American people.
Well, and they keep on spinning this pick as like the youthful vigor that Paul Ryan's going to inject into this campaign. He's a gym rat. He's a fitness nut. He does P90X, and I'm like, yeah, he's energetic, all right. He's energetic about taking your Medicare and your Social Security and making you pay more in taxes and going after public schools and everything else that middle-class people and working families rely on.
Well, that energy over the time he's been in Congress, for one thing, I'm not sure where it was legislating. He's been in Congress for 13 years and passed two bills, so I'm not sure what he was doing for his constituents. But his energy has always been focused on whatever seemed like the good politics for Paul Ryan at the time, getting in with the Bush crowd by pushing the Social Security privatization.
And even more extreme approach to Social Security privatization than even the Bush administration was willing to pursue.
If you can believe this, the Bush administration said the Ryan approach to privatization was irresponsible. Not that the Bush plan wasn't bad enough, but they said that the Ryan approach was irresponsible. Now, back then when he was he was becoming a foot soldier in the Bush, in the Bush Army. He supported deficit busting policies like the wars without offsets, the Medicare prescription drug benefit.
And this is a budget. This is the budget chairman for the Republicans right now. And back during the wars, he voted for all this stuff without including the wars in our budgets.
Yeah, didn't include the wars in the budget. Didn't offset it. Didn't pay for it. Didn't pay for the prescription drug benefit. Didn't worry about what the tax breaks for the wealthy in the two rounds of Bush tax cuts would do for the deficit. Then, when the tide shifted and all of a sudden the Tea Party was in charge, now he's an avowed deficit hawk, right? Or he would hold yourself out to be. Not that his budget does anything about the deficit or debt in any real way for like 30 years. But so, he's not this pure, he's not this pure as a driven snow deficit hawk. I mean, he has been wherever he needed to be at the
time. Well, he's a partisan ideologue more than anything.
That's exactly right. Whatever the current version of that ideology is, puts him in the majority thought. Now the Tea Party's in charge now, so he's gone way off the rails, ending Medicare as we know it, undermining all of the job creating initiatives that we've all agreed on over the years, and tax breaks for the wealthy paid for by increasing taxes on the middle class. I mean, he's a perfect fit for Romney because he's adopted all those positions. I just don't know how they think that this is going to play with the American people who are tired of seeing others benefit through their hard work.
Well, and say what you will about Paul Ryan, though, he's never been coy about telling people where he stands on issues.
Right.
Until he got around Mitt Romney. He was out at the Iowa State Fair, one of my favorite things to do when I'm in Iowa. The Iowa State Fair is a great place to go. And you would expect, we were talking to John Nichols from The Nation, that any politician who goes to the Iowa State Fair should be prepared to talk about farm policy and ag policy. And instead, you've got Paul Ryan saying, oh, I'm just going to have fun today. We're not talking about policy. How much is Mitt Romney rubbing off on Paul Ryan?
Well, it is interesting. I mean, Paul Ryan put out a very detailed budget, a very detailed, roadmap. I mean, there are a lot of things like, what he would do to pay for some of his plan, what he would do in terms of offsets that he like Romney won't tell you, but he's been far more detailed than Romney has. Now all of a sudden he realized, Romney's been trying to hide the ball and not be straight with the American people
right
about where he is on these issues by being vague, by putting out basically talking points and not policy points. And now Ryan realizes he's got to do the same thing. So one of the reasons they picked him is he's supposed to be this smart policy guy. I don't believe that there's anything smart about getting rid of Medicare, but he's supposed to be a smart policy guy. But now he can't talk policy because Mitt Romney can't talk policy because he's, you know, he's running for office for Pete's sake.
That's why it's such a weird pick for Mitt Romney,
right?
Because if you take away the supposed strengths of your running mate, what's he left with? Brad, would you mind sticking around for one more segment with us?
Sure, absolutely.
We are chatting with Brad Woodhouse. He's the communications director for the Democratic National Committee. We're talking about Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney and the mess that's out there. When we come back, I want to talk more with Brad about Paul Ryan, but also this trip through Florida and the politics of this and how this thing has really shaken up the playing field and the electoral college map. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom all afternoon. I'm Carl Frisch, and we will be back after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Did you know Mitt Romney skipped a campaign trip in Orlando because he was too tired? I'll explain after this.
Well, you know it's suspicious when he says grits are delicious. Corporations are a friend of mine. And I know in my heart that he doesn't give a fart about the middle class and its decline. Keep on a lying, Mitt Romney.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom all afternoon. I'm Carl Frisch. Of course, that wonderful musical selection is courtesy of Rocky Mountain Mike, which you can find on Facebook at facebook.com/Rocky Mountain Mike. If you're just joining us, we are chatting with Brad Woodhouse, the communications director for the Democratic National Committee. Brad, thanks for sticking around.
Yeah, man. Glad to do it.
So we've been chatting a little bit on the show today about alternative slogans for the Romney-Ryan ticket. You know, they're calling themselves the comeback, America's comeback team. And I keep on saying, yeah, they'll come back all right. They'll come back for your Social Security, and they'll come back for your Medicare and your job and your public schools and just about anything else that you need to get by. The Obama campaign and the Democratic National Committee are calling them the go-back team. Let's talk about that.
Well, I mean, they want to go back. I mean, they really do. They want to go back to the same failed policies. But look, it's not just that. I mean, it's not just the failed policies of the Bush years. They want to do even more. I mean, if you didn't think that the Bush tax and economic policy was bad enough, meet Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. They want to. They think it was so great that they should do it all over again and inject it with steroids. I mean, they.
Well, there was a Romney advisor who said as much. He said that Mitt Romney's economic policies would be George Bush's on steroids.
Well, that's exactly right. And so it's not hyperbole for us to say it. I mean, it is in fact what they want to do. I mean, look, they have a far right wing ideology. We all know what it's really about. They don't like government. They don't trust government. They believe, in tearing down the foundation.
Well, they don't believe government can do any good, and if it is doing good, they're going to destroy it so that their point is taken.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, they want to undermine government so that they can prove their point. So, you know, people know that Social Security and Medicare in particular have been wildly successful. The most efficient healthcare delivery system in the world, the most efficient retirement program in the world in terms of costs, and you know, rather than strengthen it, they want to undermine it, particularly Medicare, which the president extended the solvency of by 8 years, increased the benefits for seniors while saving money. In the rest of the program, they want to undermine it to say, hey, our ideology is right, and the private sector knows all. I mean, look, the president says it all the time. We know if all of their philosophy worked, we should be in the best economic
right.
time ever because they practiced it for 8 years.
Yeah, and no doubt.
There's
this notion being pushed by right-wingers in their talking points and when they appear on cable TV that Paul Ryan's really not too much of a social class warrior or social warrior. He's really just economics and numbers, and he gets into the minutia of policy up to his elbows. But he is a class, a culture warrior, isn't he?
Look, he is, his positions are
probably could not be more anti-woman than they are. I mean, he wants to obviously eliminate a woman's right to choose. He wants to do it
even when rape, incest, or life of the mother.
He has signed on to legislation that would limit or outlaw certain forms of birth control. I mean, he's with the same crowd that wants to defund Planned Parenthood. He's got a voting record that nearly mirrors Michelle Bachmann's. I mean, he's as far right wing in his ideology on the economy and on social issues as you're nearly going to find in the entire Congress. And in this Congress, to be that far on the right fringe, means that you are really representing the views of a real small extreme slice of the American.
I've seen studies that have depicted him as perhaps the most extremely conservative running mate picked in 100 years by the Republican Party.
Well, that's right. There was a story out that said the most conservative since around 1900. I mean, that
any coincidence that that's about the time they'd like to bring us back to?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's another part of the go back team. I mean, they want to go back to a time where, you know, where seniors were on their own, for their health care, where Medicare in its current form, doesn't exist. And I mean, we just, that's not the direction the American people want to go. The American people are only part of that.
And for Tea Partiers who were quick to say, get your government hands off my Medicare, shouldn't they be looking at Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney?
Well,
if they get elected?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, one of the most interesting things of the Tea Party movement, you go out there and interview people at some of these events, and they want government out of all types of things, but don't touch my Medicare, don't touch my Social Security, and some of them don't even seem some people don't even seem to realize that those are government programs. Those are federal government programs. They're part of the social safety net, part of the compact that was put in place from one generation to the next. And if they're really concerned about their Social Security or Medicare, they need look no further than Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, because particularly with this issue of Medicare, they're gunning for it.
Well, and we've only got a few seconds left before we have to go at a hard break. But really quickly, what's the Democratic National Committee doing to make sure that this message gets out?
Well, I mean, we're, it's interesting. We are always, if not prepared, always try to be prepared. We were on the road doing our own bus tour when the Ryan announcement was made. So we had surrogates out in every state that Romney and Ryan were in.
Well,
we'll do that all the way between here and November.
Well, Brad, I think you guys are doing a fantastic job at the party to hold these two accountable. Thanks for joining us.
Carl, thank you, and for all you do.
All righty. This is the Tom Hartman Program, and we will be right back after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Did you know there's a bunch of Republicans who want to be in the Senate but don't think senators should be elected? More after this. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in all afternoon. I'm Carl Frisch. More about me at carlfrisch.com. That song's pretty funny because it turns out there are a bunch of Republicans who want to be senators but don't think that you should have a say in who your senator is. They'd rather have it like it was before the 17th Amendment when the state legislators chose senators. Can you imagine how crazy the Senate would be, more so than it already is, if these Republican state legislatures across the country that want to do, transvaginal ultrasounds and make, fetuses a protected class and string illegal immigrants up into a wall to protect the borders and everything else they want to do. Could you imagine if they were picking your senators? Absolutely crazy. To chat with me about that very strange, legal opinion of these folks, is our good friend Ian Millhiser. He's an attorney and senior constitutional policy analyst at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Ian, thanks for joining us.
How are you? It's good to be here.
So I thought this was just absolutely bonkers. You've got a post up at Think Progress where you talk about the six Republicans who think voters should not be able to choose their own senators.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the funny thing is since I put that post up yesterday, it's now seven. Pete Hoekstra, who's running for Senate in Michigan, just added his name to the list. But, yeah, these guys want to go back to the 19th century where voters didn't have a right to pick their own senators, where the state legislature was given the ability to pick their senators for them. And, you know, there's lots of things wrong with that idea, but I just don't understand, you know, why anyone could look at the United States and say, you know what the problem is with this country? We've got too much democracy. We need to get rid of some of that.
Well, I mean, and they're thinking it's probably a little bit easier for corporations to buy a state legislative seat than it is a federal seat.
Well, you know, and if they're thinking that, you know, there's a lot of historical precedent. Or I'm sorry, are you there?
Yes, we're here.
Okay. Yeah, no, if they're thinking that, there's actually some precedent for that. You know, Citizens United is bad, but at least with Citizens United, if some billionaire wants to go out and buy a Senate seat, they've got to convince hundreds of thousands of voters to come along
right.
with them. But if the decision's up to a state legislature, you'll need to buy off a few hundred lawmakers. That's easier.
Well, and if you think about it, I mean, just as an example, my friend Sarah Buxton is a member of the Vermont State House, and when she ran, I think her budget was like $10,000, and she had mm-hmm. to walk to every door in that district, and it's a volunteer job in Vermont. So imagine how easy it would be if corporations knew they could get the Senate and a state legislature all at the same time.
Yeah, no, it's exactly right. You know, if someone wanted to try to take her out, if it cost her $10,000 to get in, corporation can offer them $50,000 to take her out on the condition that the person who wins that seat in the state legislature will also vote for the senator that corporation wants.
It's crazy. And I mean, when she spent 10 grand, by the way, it was a record in the state. So it would be really easy for these corporations. But more than anything, I think this illustrates the contempt these guys have for the text and history of our Constitution and amendments, right?
No, it's exactly right. I mean, I spent a lot of time litigating the Affordable Care Act cases when that was up in front of the federal courts. And what's really shocking, when you boil down the other side's argument, they were claiming that a constitution which says that Congress can regulate commerce doesn't allow Congress to regulate the entire interstate healthcare market. You know, and I just would look at them and say, you know, have you read this Constitution that you're trying to lecture me about? Because it's pretty clear on this point.
Well, yeah, I mean, they seem fit to read whatever they want into it. And I'm a constitutional progressive as far as I'm concerned. I believe that there's a lot that we can learn from the text and history of our Constitution, the progressive path that our nation has taken in constitutional law that's being eroded by this Roberts Court, by and large.
Mm-hmm.
So where do they rationalize that getting the state legislatures back in control of picking senators is a good idea?
I mean, I think it is part of this larger theory. You know, it's part and parcel with the Affordable Care Act case. It's part and parcel with these people who wave the 10th Amendment around and claim that pretty much everything that happened in the 20th century must be unconstitutional. You know, after Obama was elected, conservatives kind of freaked out, and they decided they needed to come up with ways to weaken the federal government so Obama couldn't do anything. And one way they thought they could weaken the federal government was if you return Senate elections to the state legislature, then that somehow puts the power in the hands of the state. And if it's not in the hands of the state, then the federal government is somehow weaker. And if, you know, that sounds confusing to you, it's confusing to me, too. but that's more or less what the argument is. It's that the purpose of the Senate before the 17th Amendment was to represent the state's interests, not the interests of the American people. And if we return to a country where there's a whole House of Congress that just represents the states, that somehow that will lead to this libertarian utopia that they want.
Disregarding, of course, the fact that state legislatures ratified the 17th Amendment.
And, you know, what's interesting, you know, I talked before about how there was all this corruption in many state legislatures where people would essentially buy a senator.
Alec. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, you know, the Alec of 1904 or whatever right. It was. But the truth is that, you know, by the time the 17th Amendment was ratified, it was an easy lift because most states had figured out on their own that having state legislatures pick senators was a bad idea. And so they voluntarily set up systems where there would be an election and everyone in the state legislature would pledge that they would vote for whoever the people chose. And so most states, you really did have real Senate elections even before the 17th Amendment was ratified. And so, you know, these folks who want to get rid of it want to go back to something that even when state lawmakers had the power to choose senators, most of them said, oh, you know, we don't want that power. We actually want to live in a democracy.
Well, do you have the list of those seven Republicans in front of you?
I do. So
let's read them off really quick.
Sure thing. There's four Senate candidates who think their own election should be unconstitutional. And that's Jeff Flake in Arizona, Richard Murdoch in Indiana, Todd Akin in Missouri, and Pete Hoekstra in Michigan. Senator Mike Lee is a sitting senator who thinks that the election that he won should have been unconstitutional.
Well, he's absolutely bonkers and has no understanding of what the Constitution is, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he thinks that federal child labor laws are unconstitutional. You know, he said that Medicare is unconstitutional. And so he's not, you know, really with it when it comes to the Constitution. Rick Perry, who's also one of those guys who thinks pretty much everything's unconstitutional,
right,
has called the 17th Amendment a mistake. And then my
really quick, in fairness to Rick Perry, there's no way he'd ever become a senator by being elected by the people of Texas. He'd have to go through the legislature, so maybe he's just looking for a promotion.
Yeah, at this point, you know, Rick Perry did so much damage to himself with his oops of a presidential run that I don't know if he could win an election.
Right. Then.
But my favorite person on this list is, you know, the person who probably has the most control over what the how the Constitution is going to be interpreted. And that's, Justice Scalia, a sitting member of the Supreme Court, has said, you know, the problem is we got too much democracy in this country and we need to fix that.
Well, he's been trying for a while from the bench to fix that.
Yeah, he certainly did this past term. You know, if you read his case, his opinion in the Affordable Care Act case.
Oh, I did. I tried to do it in the internal monologue in my head was the co-anchors of Fox and Friends, because that's what it sounded like it was an audition for.
And that's really what he sounded like during the oral argument. I was in the courtroom for that. And I mean, you know, his behavior recently has been very shocking. You know, in the past, he's been very strident. You've always known where he stood, but he hasn't sounded like he's running for office as a Republican. And that has changed lately.
Well, far be it for me to speculate, but do you think that he might be looking to raise his profile so that if there's a Republican president, he can step aside and go make some money?
Well, I mean, Scalia, you know, I think he genuinely enjoys the job that he's got right now. And he's not young.
Right.
I believe Scalia is 75 now.
Right.
So you know, I mean, I don't know how much time he would have to enjoy the money that he would make that way. And you know, the associate justices on the Supreme Court, you know, they don't make law partner money, but they make good money.
Sure.
So I just
well, they also get speaking fees, I understand.
They do.
And so one last question before we let you go. The 17th Amendment is not the only thing these wackos want to repeal, right?
That's right. I mean, you know, you've heard talk about repealing the 14th Amendment's guarantee that everyone born here is a United States citizen. You've heard some people talking about getting rid of the amendment that allows the income tax, the 16th Amendment. And then you just have people who read the Constitution and assume that it means whatever they want it to mean, that, you know, you know, Todd Akin, one of the guys on my list, he said, oh, yeah, I think that Medicare is probably unconstitutional.
Ian, these people are bonkers, and we can expect a lot more of this good work from you at thinkprogress.org/justice. Ian Millhiser, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All righty. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around. We'll be back with the news of the nation after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, I'll be chatting with the Talk Radio News Service. Stick around.
Every time I read the news, I'm always more confused.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom all afternoon. I am Carl Frisch. We've got about 10 minutes before the bottom of the hour, and joining us now for all the news you need to know is the Talk Radio News Service. What's happening out there?
Well, the first thing I want to talk about is this new press information saying that Romney has a 51% favorability rating in the great state of Ohio, my state. Now, as you and I were talking off air, and you have said that, look, the former senator had a very good, Mike DeWine had a good favorability rating, and yet he still lost. Ohio is one of those weird states, and if you really understand it and know it, listen, they could ask somebody, favorability does not mean they're voting for them.
Right.
And that is where pollsters in Ohio always make that mistake. And the other thing, situation in Ohio, is I happen to know that the Democratic Party there, through the Chairman Redfin, through the former executive director, through Liz Brown, Sherrod Brown's daughter, who's very active in the Ohio Democratic Party. I think she's the assistant director or something like that. They understand each precinct and getting out the vote.
Well, they also are super organized, having just beaten back the governor's attempt to strip labor rights.
That's right. So you have an organization. Look, they didn't win in 2008 in terms of, or 2010 in terms of those votes. You know, my friend Lee Fisher ran against Portman and lost. But the fact is that was one of those tied years.
Sure.
And you could, but they are so organized. And, you know, Romney's people just aren't on the ground. And Kasich is not, well, if they did a favorability rating on John Kasich, it would not be so pretty. And so you have to say, oh, Romney, yeah, he's favorable. But are you actually going to go in that voting booth and check, mark that X or press the lever or doing whatever you do in your local community? I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not.
And then you also have my cousin Josh Mandel, who's running against Sherrod. You know, Josh is
that young whippersnapper.
That young whippersnapper, that's exactly what I call him. And, you know, you have cousin Josh over there. And is he going to really bring anybody along? I don't think so.
It'd be tough. But Sherrod
Brown's
quite a tenacious
campaigner. I'm hoping I see him at the Republican
campaigner.
Convention.
Yeah, well, if I was him, I'd focus on being at home and winning an election. But I'm glad he's going to Tampa. I can't think of anything more fun than Tampa in August with Mitt Romney, but that's just me.
Well, you know, I'm going to be there, and of course, I'm looking forward to going to that dolphin tail place. But no, you know, it's so interesting to go to the Republican convention and talk to these people, and you just want to scratch your head and say, what makes them think the way they think?
I was in Minneapolis-St. Paul last time around watching extremely old people find out on their jitterbug cell phones that Sarah Palin was the nominee and scratching their heads because they didn't know who she was. So I think this is going to be an interesting convention.
It is going to be very interesting. As you know, Chris Christie is being given top billing. The RNC, Rance Priebus today, talked about how they want to give him top billing, that he's done such a good job in New Jersey.
Can I? My prediction, the thing that separates him from most Republicans is that he's socially moderate on choice and some gay rights, and he will not mention either one of those things in his speech.
My guess is that you're correct. And you know, it's interesting because Go Proud is doing a big event at the convention.
That's right.
They believe that if, and actually Talk Radio News, by the way, is co-sponsoring that at the Republican convention, just because we kind of like to, you know,
sure,
stick to people a little. And it's interesting. I mean, they say, look, somebody's got to support these guys so that we have some inroads into them. And they're right.
Well, that's what the log cabins are for. I mean, the log cabin Republicans learned a long time ago that they were getting nowhere by simply supporting every single Republican that came down the pike. And that's why the log cabins haven't yet endorsed Romney Ryan. And they only typically endorse candidates that are pro-gay. You know, it's the divide among gays in the Republican Party. One group has less self-loathing, and yes, they support tax cuts and the foreign policy aims of the party, but they think of their own civil rights first.
Well, it's interesting. I interviewed Romney in 2007, and we went at it about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And, you know, he gives me all the reasons. Well, my partner is a former U-2 pilot, went Air Force Academy graduate, all that kind of stuff. And he's going, well, we just agree to disagree and all that. I mean, I have it on tape with Romney doing it. And, of course, he was just wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's, you know, I don't know how he's ever going to be able to live up to his original claim that he would be more pro-gay rights than Teddy Kennedy. And the only thing that he seems to support is visitation in hospitals for partners, unless the state wants to make it illegal. There's nothing pro-gay about this ticket.
Well, the other thing is there's this new Romney ad. It's targeting Obama's Medicare cuts. But, in fact, what it looks like, that they actually expanded Medicare cuts. They closed the prescription drug donut hole, as it's called, because if it was up to $2,000 to pay, and then it was over $4,000 or whatever the numbers were, I don't remember.
Yeah.
But now the Republicans are going after the president, saying, well, he's cutting off $700, but it was for Part C Medicare. It was not for the main Medicare. You can't get through.
Also, they point out, you know, the cuts they also talk about. One of the things that the administration did was change the way that doctors who are billing Medicare are paid. So you don't get paid simply by asking for more tests and more procedures on people. You get paid for the outcomes of the treatment that you're giving people. It's a far better way for public health, and it's a far more cost-efficient way of saving money. So they look at the money that was saved by doing that accounting technique that was then put into Obamacare as a cut to Medicare. No services were cut. If anything, people were getting better services from their doctors.
For sure. And this is exactly what I believe is going to come out in the debates. Romney is going to have to not, fish around and do what he can do on the campaign trail, because he can get away with saying things to the press, et cetera, because he's going to have a moderator there that is going to press him. Now, it's
fingers crossed.
Yes. Well, understand. But I think
Jim Lehrer will do a great job. I'm really looking forward to Candy Crowley being the first female anchor in 20 years. I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
In the next hour, we've got a discussion about where we stand with marriage equality, and we're taking your calls. What should the Romney-Ryan campaign slogan be? I want your examples. I think Romney-Ryan reverse sounds about right. Toll free, 866-987-8466. I'm Carl Frisch, in for Tom Hartman, and we will be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom all afternoon. This is Carl Frisch, Democratic strategist, syndicated columnist. More about me at carlfrisch.com. Connect with me on Facebook and Twitter at Carl Frisch. We've been chatting a bit about the slogan the Romney-Ryan ticket has chosen to try and win over the hearts and minds of Americans that will be hurt by their economic policies. It's going to be a tough sell. They're calling themselves the comeback team, and we've been asking you for alternative slogans. The Obama campaign is calling them the go-back team. I've been saying, no, they are the comeback team. They're coming back for your Social Security and your Medicare and your jobs and your public schools and everything else that the middle class needs in this country, all the working families need to get ahead. Let's get some of your suggestions. How about Hack in Decatur? Hey, Hack.
Hey, Carl. Good to hear you, man.
Thank you.
My suggestion for the Romney Ryan campaign slogan: we're running for office for Pete's sake.
Well, that's certainly nice for Pete's sake. I think that's a very good suggestion. It couldn't fit the awkwardness that is Mitt Romney any better. Why don't we go to, how about Bill in Sarasota, Florida? Hey, Bill.
Hi, my suggestion is from the movie Wall Street. Gordon Gekko is a corporate raider.
Right.
So is Romney, and his main there's a famous line from that movie, greed is good. So I think that ought to be the Republican slogan, greed
well,
is good.
Your slogan is good, Bill. Thanks for offering it. You can also post your suggestions on Facebook at Carl Frisch, facebook.com/Carl Frisch. I'm dying to get more of them. How about let's go to Dick in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Hey, Dick.
I just thought about this as you were just speaking. I think we have to give a slogan. Let's go back to 1940 Germany.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We've already turned around and twisted things, making the, instead of Jewish population, we make the poor the target.
Well,
and then we go over and we make them do our roads and whatnot for nothing. And yet the control is in our government.
Well, it's an interesting point. I mean, this really isn't just about the poor. This is about everybody that works for a living in this country. If you look at the economic policies of the Romney-Ryan team, I mean, just look at how, if you want to know why somebody like Mitt Romney would pick somebody like Paul Ryan, all you have to do is look at Paul Ryan's tax plan. If Mitt Romney were paying taxes under Paul Ryan's tax plan, his taxes wouldn't have been the 13% that he paid that we know about. His taxes would have been less than 1%. No wonder he picked Paul Ryan. I mean, come on. It's pretty obvious. How about Paul in Ann Arbor, Michigan? Hey, Paul.
Yeah, hey, Carl.
So what's your suggestion for a new slogan?
Yeah, it's based on something you said yesterday, and that is Romney, Ryan, Bush, Cheney on steroids. If you liked all the wars and dead soldiers and financial crisis and depression and 7 million jobs lost, if you liked all that Bush brought us, then you'll love Romney.
Well, I appreciate you attributing the quote to me, but let's be very clear about where I got it from. A Mitt Romney economic advisor said, and I quote, Mitt Romney's economic policies would be like George W. Bush's on steroids. I mean, you couldn't be more clear about the direction that Mitt Romney wants to take this country than his own economic advisor. I mean, he wasn't even, you know, spinning. He was just being honest. And sometimes honesty tells you everything you need to know. It's refreshing to actually get it from somebody from Romney's campaign. Let's go to Renee in Judah, Wisconsin. Hey, Renee.
I think their slogan should be, we're not in charge, because I don't really think Romney was able to even pick his own vice presidential VP when it was in the Post and the Times saying, you know, we don't like anybody else. We like this guy. And my doomsday scenario is that they really don't want Romney in office at all, but they do want Ryan. And, you know, as soon as he gives the oath of office, we're looking at an assassination of Romney.
Oh, I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's probably a bit far in terms of conspiracy theories. I do think that much of the Republican chattering class, certainly the people that they consider intellectuals within the party, would much rather have Paul Ryan as president, perhaps even Mitt Romney. And maybe that's why there was that Freudian slip of Mitt Romney saying that he was introducing the next president of the United States. Do we have that sound?
Join me in welcoming the next president of the United States, Paul Ryan. Every now and then I'm known to make a mistake. I did not make a mistake with this guy. But I can tell you this, he's going to be the next vice president of the United States.
You know, nothing if not laughter is sparked in me by Willard Mitt Romney. Hey, Richard in West Salem. How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. Yeah, my slogan is Ryan Romney, privatize America.
Well, they certainly would like to. I mean, isn't that what this is all about when it comes to their plans for Social Security and Medicare and everything else that working
schools,
families need?
Yeah. It's really sad, though.
It's a sad state of things, and it couldn't be a sign of more desperation on Romney's front. And let's look at how they rolled this thing out. I think it's pretty funny if you think about it. Romney's team was saying, you need to go download an iPhone app and you'll be the first to know. And then, of course, Friday night, everybody started finding out about it. So any of those poor fools that downloaded the Romney mobile app didn't find out about it until the wee hours of the morning. And you can bet that they were all glued to their iPhones waiting for the news. It must have been quite a surprise to know that they spent time downloading an app only to find out what Twitter had known for hours at some point. Let's go to Kevin in Phoenix. Hey, Kevin.
Yeah, I would say my slogan for the Romney Ryan campaign is, we divide and conquer, but the only one, we're the only ones that complain about it when we, we divide and conquer, but yet only complain about it when we accuse the president of doing it. Because I say this because Ryan and Romney, they both support not building a mob near Ground Zero, or, you know, basically supporting his Medicare plan, also not supporting the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I mean, all those things that they support, they're complaining about dividing and conquer, but yet, based on what they support, they're not going to mend any sort of divide in this country. In fact, they'll probably even make it worse.
Yeah, I agree. It's probably a little bit long for a slogan, but it's the Romney team, so they've got plenty of corporate money. They might just buy some billboards to put up the full sentence. You know, it might be the longest bumper sticker in the world, but I bet Ann Romney could fit it if she broke it in two and put it on both Cadillacs. So she's got that going for him. What do you think the Romney Ryan slogan should be? You can tell us on Facebook at facebook.com/Carl Frisch. You can tell us on the phone, 866-987-8466. Let's talk to John in Minneapolis. Hey, John.
I just wanted to say, in keeping with Paul Ryan's Ayn Randian philosophy that...
He's now denying that he has a fetish for Ayn Rand.
You know, of his, you know, his philosophy that selfishness should be the organizing principle of your... of what you're all about. How about, we've got our millions, so you just get yours.
Yeah, well, I've got a question for you. You're in Minneapolis, St. Paul area. What do you have to tell people, the people of Tampa, of what it's like to live in a city that hosts a Republican convention?
Well, I can tell you some very specific things. It was a nightmare. I worked at the time very close to downtown. I worked for a hospital organization that had two hospitals relatively close. One would not allow any of our patients to use our recreational garden, which we have a lot of long-term patients where we were, because they were afraid of something happening.
We're gonna have to leave it there. I apologize, but we've got to take a hard break. This is the Tom Hartman Program. In for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch, and we will be right back with more of your calls.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Up next, more about the Republican convention. Who will and won't be speaking?
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program with guest host Carl Frisch. Connect with him on Twitter at Carl Frisch and visit carlfrisch.com for more information.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, 20 after. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch. You know me from Media Matters, maybe. You know me from Tom's show, Bill Press, Stephanie Miller, wherever. We're happy that you're here. A reminder, the Washington Blade, Washington, D.C.'s gay and lesbian newspaper of record, has nominated me as one of Washington's best LGBT television personalities. If you think that's the case, you can find information on voting at facebook.com/Carl Frisch, and you can vote every day through September 5th. We've been taking your calls about what the Romney Ryan slogan should be, and I want to hit one more before we talk a little bit about the Republican convention. Let's go to Renee in Taos, New Mexico. Hey, Renee.
Hi, Carl. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, hon. I'm thinking that it should be Romney and Ryan, experts at duckin' and lion.
I like the rhyme to it, but I also, I'm maybe looking for a little more alliteration. I like Romney, Ryan, reverse. Deborah in Akron, Ohio, what do you think?
Hi, Carl. I'm glad you're on the tube, and
thank
I'm
you.
Glad you have a microphone.
I appreciate it.
And I'm glad you're on the planet. Okay, here's my deal. Religious, ridiculous Republicans.
Well, it's perfect. Romney, Ryan, religious, ridiculous Republicans. I think that's a lot of R's. I think that's pretty decent. So the Republican convention is coming up in just a matter of weeks in Tampa. I mean, if you couldn't think of anything more exciting than Mitt Romney, add Tampa and August to it. and the excitement just builds. But I learned yesterday that Sarah Palin won't be speaking at the convention. Any of you who are used to the steady diet of word salad that she produces on any given day are no doubt as disappointed as I am, especially when you consider the fact that George W. Bush isn't going to be speaking, Dick Cheney's not going to be speaking. They really are trying to pull one over on the American people and make sure that they don't remember the more unsavory characters within their own party. But you do have people like Chris Christie giving the keynote address. Of course, he's not going to mention any of the things that make him a little bit interesting as a Republican. He'll never mention that he's pro-choice or that he, on occasion, believes in gay rights. Those are too taboo for an audience like this Republican convention. And then, of course, you've got Rick Santorum will be speaking, so that'll be good. But what can be done to show the Republican Party is nothing more than a carbon copy of the Bush years. You know, as we've been saying all afternoon, Romney's own economic advisor said that the Romney administration's tax policies and economic policies would be like George W. Bush's on steroids. And steroids are not a good thing, my friends, even if you are in sport, as Mitt Romney might put it. So it'll be interesting to watch. These things are pretty much, well-manufactured, well-oiled productions at this point. Although, so are trips abroad, and so are campaign rollout tours. You would think that when Mitt Romney went to the UK, that he would have been well-prepared and well-staffed, but he still gaffed his way across Europe and Israel. You would have thought that the rollout of Paul Ryan would have gone smoothly because they have these professional people called advance workers to go in and make sure that all the T's are crossed and I's are dotted, and yet still announced him as the next president of the United States. Still, I mean, they're in Florida for part of the rollout bus tour, and Paul Ryan's not even on the trip. And the campaign says it's not because of Medicare. What a friggin' joke. So maybe we'll actually get to see a little excitement at the Republican convention. Maybe we'll actually get to see something a little bit more old school. There's been a lot of rumors that people want to dump Mitt Romney. Maybe they'll actually go ahead and try. In fact, there's some documents being circulated online by Republicans that are going to the convention about how they can use the rules to deny Mitt Romney the nomination. I don't think it's going to happen. These things are so scripted, and they've got the delegates so well positioned in line to do whatever they're told to do that it's not likely to happen at all. But it's certainly interesting, and with the number of Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich, and Rick Santorum delegates at the convention, we're likely to see some interesting shenanigans take place, even if it's not from the center stage, the podium. It'd be nice to see Paul Ryan get up there and actually explain to people why he thinks that Medicare, Social Security, and all the other things he's trying to kill are a bad idea, but don't hold your breath anytime soon. Let's go to Jim in New York City. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Mike, my slogan for Romney Ryan is Romney Ryan, middle class, rack and ruin.
I like that. It has a reference to a sport. Pool or bowling, which I like. And Mitt Romney, since he's a big fan of sport as well, he would probably like it too. But isn't that what this is all about with them? I mean, we cannot, it's exciting the prospect of having, Paul Ryan as the Republican nominee for vice president because it makes it a lot easier for us to win in November. But we can't rest on our laurels, right? You remember when George Bush was running and people said that he could never get in the White House?
I do, and it happened. I remember when Ronald Reagan couldn't win.
Even better. I mean, Ronald Reagan was elected twice, and George Bush was elected 1.5 times, once by the people and once by the Supreme Court. They can win. And the last thing, can you imagine anything worse than a President Romney, a Vice President Ryan, a Minority Leader McConnell, and a Speaker Eric Cantor? I didn't say John Boehner on purpose, by the way, because we all know that John Boehner is the emperor without clothes. It just looks like he's wearing an orange jumpsuit. And Eric Cantor is the marionette practitioner behind the scenes making all the movements for the House, Republican majority. It's fascinating to be sure. And with the element of Ron Paul on the ticket, or excuse me, I just made a lot of Ron Paul people very happy, but with Paul Ryan, you never know what could happen. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling in for Tom. I'm Carl Frisch. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, more great progressive chat.
Never thought of the way.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, filling up for Tom all afternoon. I am Carl Frisch, Democratic strategist, syndicated columnist. More about me at carlfrisch.com. It's 34 after. One of the big issues that's been going on this past year is the fight for marriage equality. Of course, Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney are staunchly opposed, both supporting a constitutional amendment, I guess in an effort to prove that the Republican Party is really committed to being against evolution. They're actually further to the right than George W. Bush. George W. Bush at least supported civil unions. Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan don't even support civil unions. They don't support domestic partnerships. So it's a curious state of affairs when they, you know, claim that they want to treat gay and lesbian people with respect. Joining me now to talk about the fight for marriage equality is my good friend Brian Silva. He is the executive director of Marriage Equality USA, which you can find at marriageequality.org. And you can follow them on Twitter at MEUSA. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Carl. Glad to be here.
Well, just to give some backstory, I've known Brian since I was 16 years old. He was 16 as well, and we were both playing the role of heterosexual, is a good way to put it. I was Republican. He was still a good Democrat. But now you are involved in the fight for marriage equality full-time as the executive director of Marriage Equality USA. How are things going?
You know, it's really an exciting time right now. We have had a huge momentum in the courts, in the legislatures, at the ballot box, and in the polls. I mean, everything is just kind of going in our direction. We're not giving up by any means. We know there's people working very strong against us, but you know, I think signs are pointing in a positive direction towards a world of equality and equal rights for families.
Well, you mentioned polls. I mean, the polls have moved dramatically in the last year. A lot after President Obama came out and endorsed marriage equality. I think of Maryland in particular, where the African American community did a 180 on the issue, and now support marriage equality by a fairly substantial margin, given their reticence to the issue in the past. How much do you think the president's support for marriage equality is playing into the growing likelihood that we will have marriage equality in a handful of more states after this election?
Yeah, you know, I think that his support is a huge benefit. It can only be a benefit, you know, in the African American community, but you know, really in all communities. I think that you know, there has always been support in a lot of these communities. You know, sometimes we as activists just haven't really engaged with you know, communities of color and faith
right.
communities, and that's something we've worked very, very hard to do and to really you know work in coalition with them. But I mean, you can't underestimate the impact that his support has had, and just as it's trickled through the administration and you know even across Capitol Hill.
So you mentioned these different communities that groups have been pulling together post Proposition 8, which was the ballot initiative that took away the right to marry for gay and lesbian couples. There was a lot of focus put on the idea that we'd not done what you just mentioned. We'd not reached out sufficiently to groups that might not, you know too much about marriage equality or that would likely support marriage equality if they just had a little bit more information. A lot has been done in the last 4 years since that initiative passed in California. You mentioned some of the groups that you know, people like Marriage Equality USA are working with, these coalitions in the different states. How is that taking shape?
It's been a tremendous success story. I mean, we've got you know members of the faith communities of different religious groups and churches, you know, pastors and rabbis coming out in support and really pushing back against the idea that you know if you're a person of faith that you can't also be a person in favor of marriage equality or equality.
Well, and that's a key issue there, because if you think about it, one of the arguments used by people that are opposed to marriage equality is oftentimes you're going to infringe on our religious beliefs, which is not true. No church has ever been required to marry two people that it doesn't want to, whether they be a same-sex couple, whether they be a Catholic and a Jew who want to get married. No church has ever been required. But by denying marriage equality, aren't we in fact infringing upon the religious rights of some faiths that would like to marry same-sex couples?
Absolutely. There's a lot of faith traditions out there that support the right for, you know, gay and lesbian couples to get married, and also the right of folks of no faith that would like to get married, you know, in a civil ceremony. It's a, you know, a big misconception that, you know, folks have these, you know, wonderful wedding ceremonies where they're married, you know, the priest or the rabbi marries them, but, you know, what really confers the rights and responsibilities is the civil marriage license, and that, you know, marriage can only be issued by by the government. That's your legal
right.
rights and responsibilities.
Your only recognition that you'll mm-hmm. get when you get your tax cuts and everything else. You can get married in the church if you want to, but without that marriage license from the state, you're not going to get the benefits of that marriage from your government.
Absolutely.
And the responsibilities, indeed. So we've got a lot of different states with the issue on the ballot. I mean, in places like Minnesota, anti-gay activists have put a ballot initiative up that would enshrine in the state constitution of Minnesota that marriage equality is not an okay thing. In places like Maryland and Washington state, where governors have signed marriage equality into law after it was passed by the legislatures, those laws are being reviewed by their people, and they will either say, yes, we approve of what the governor's done, or no, we won't, and they'll deny marriage equality. In places like Maine, there's actually a ballot initiative going up that says, people of Maine, do you support marriage equality? Because if you do, then we'll have it here. What's the fight looking like?
You know, it's actually looking really good. I sometimes hesitate to say something like that because it makes people think that we can, you know, sit back and relax.
No resting on laurels.
No. It's important to note. You know, the polls are really in our favor, and, you know, they're in our favor in lots of different groups, you know. Catholics supporting it overwhelmingly, you know, the African American community moving forward, progressives obviously, you know, pushing for it, and even Republicans are moving in that direction as well. Just recently, a group was launched, you know, to bring that conservative belief that, you know, it's not the government's right to decide, you know, whether you can get married or not, and bringing conservatives into the fold as
Young
well.
Young Conservatives for Marriage Equality, I think is what it was called.
Absolutely. And, you know, we were very successful when we passed it up in New York. We did it with the help of four Republican senators who,
right.
obviously, on a lot of other issues, we disagree with them, but we showed that you could come across the aisle and you could support that. So, you know, we're very, very hopeful that this will be the first time that we're able to pass marriage equality at the ballot and take away that argument that some of our detractors have tried to use.
Well, the argument being that it's never won. First of all, it's not true, right? In Arizona, the first time they put it up for a vote to deny marriage equality, it failed. It didn't pass until the second time when they restricted it a little bit more, because the first time they wanted to get rid of marriage equality, civil unions, and domestic partnerships, and the people of Arizona said no. So they lie when they say that, but this would be a good argument. I mean, if you think about it, before President Obama had endorsed marriage equality, a lot of people on the right that are opposed to marriage equality would say, well, I just have the same view as President Obama. Mm. And that argument is now gone by the, you know, the wayside. What I find interesting is now that President Obama is in favor of marriage equality, it was interesting when he first said it that a lot of people were saying he was doing it for political purposes. You know, times have changed in my life when people are saying that a candidate is doing something pro-gay because of political purposes.
It truly is a different landscape, and it just kind of goes to show that the folks that are fighting against marriage equality are really kind of just grabbing at any last straw that they can find. Because, you know, as we have been having conversation after conversation with people, you know, across the country, and, you know, more LGBT Americans are living out and proud, and people are, you know, working together and living together and going to church together, you know, folks are realizing that, you know, LGBT Americans are just the same as everybody else, and to deny them the right to get married is, you know, totally inconsistent with what this country was founded on.
If you're just joining us, we are chatting with Brian Silva. He's the executive director of Marriage Equality USA, which you can find online at marriageequality.org. You mentioned a key fact in the progression of LGBT civil rights, which is more and more people are living openly and honestly as gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender. This is an election cycle, like I said, where we could see three more states add marriage equality to the law books there. But we could also see our first gay senator elected in Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin. You can see our first bisexual person elected openly to the Senate in Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona. You could even see a handful of more gay members of Congress from places like California and Wisconsin and Arizona and a variety of other states, New York. What do you think that does to Congress as a body, even if Republicans maintain control, if they're, let's say that there's six gay members of Congress next time around?
You know, it's hard to go out to dinner with somebody or, you know, go, you know, on a trip overseas with someone or work next to someone day in and day out. And then, you know, at the very next minute, vote on something that, you know, would, you know, strip fundamentally their equality and their rights away. And we have seen this ever since, you know, the Stonewall riots and the movement for LGBT Americans to be out and proud. So I think, it, you know, it can only be good. It's a true representation and reflection of America and who we are. And it helps to also show, you know, a lot of LGBT teens that, you know, it's okay to be out. It's okay to be proud. It's there are people out there that will support you. And it just, I think it brings our country a little bit closer to fulfilling the dream that it's promised.
It's certainly true. You know, I'm struck by some history that was made, you know, just this month in terms of the March for Marriage Equality. The Democratic Party, for the first time ever, will include marriage equality as a plank in the party's platform. The Republican Party platform, of course, doesn't include that yet, although we've seen some state Republican Party platforms being softened a little bit in their approach to LGBT equality. Brian, I'd love it if you could stick around for the next segment so we can talk about what that means for 2012 and the future of our political system. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Filling in for Tom, I'm Carl Frisch. And when we come back, we will chat about that history that's being made.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Up next, more about the Democratic Party platform, including marriage equality. Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program, the final segment of the afternoon. Filling in for Tom all day today, I am Carl Frisch. More about me at carlfrisch.com. If you're just joining us, we are talking about the fight for marriage equality with Brian Silva. He is the executive director of Marriage Equality USA, which you can find online at marriageequality.org. Before we left in the last break, we were talking about the Democratic Party platform. For the first time ever, has language that supports marriage equality. How big of a deal is that?
It not only is it a big deal, but the way that it came about was huge. I mean, it was unanimous votes here and there. It was almost without controversy. And that in and of itself is almost just as important as the fact that they were able to pass it, because it just goes to show how far we've come in having these types of conversations.
I was shocked because I remember when they started pushing for it to be, as soon as President Obama came out and endorsed marriage equality, there was a movement in the party to get the party platform to line up with President Obama's view, and it looked like it was in question as to whether or not that was going to happen. Some state parties weren't coming right out and saying, yeah, let's do this. But then to see it happen unanimously, as you said, is pretty awesome. I mean, party platforms don't mean much in terms of where the candidates end up standing on issues anymore. But to know that one of the two major political parties in this country is on the record saying that they support marriage equality. And that's just one piece of the LGBT equality, planks of the platform. They also come out full-fledged in favor of ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, including gender identity, and a bunch of other great issues. What can people listening at home or watching at home on Free Speech TV do to help organizations like Marriage Equality USA?
Yeah, I think it's so important for folks to just make that choice to actually finally get involved. You know, in some ways it doesn't always matter. you know, what you do. It's the fact that you're out there doing it. Like you said, you can go to marriageequality.org. You can sign up with us to volunteer. You can donate to help out with the, you know, the ballot measures that are going on this fall there. If you live in one of those states, you know, call
and
one
of the... Let's review them really quick. You've got Maine, Maryland, Washington, and Minnesota.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you can get involved in any of those states. And in any other state that, you know, marriage isn't legal, you know, contact your local state-based, you know, LGBT organization and find out what they're doing. You know, encourage them to be, you know, pushing for marriage, and find out how you can get involved with them.
So, we've got, just a few short months until, the election in November. What are the headlines going to be in November, if these initiatives pass?
You know, it's kind of amazing because I can already picture the headline right now. If we are able to pass the ballot in these four states, we will have extended equal marriage rights to almost 50 million extra Americans. So that's what I'm hoping to wake up to the next morning is, you know, 50 million Americans can finally marry the person that they love, protect their families, and live as free and equal members of the country just like everybody else.
So if people are saying that this election doesn't matter, it matters – to not just all of us, but in particular 50 million Americans who would stand to benefit greatly if things go right in this election. And then it sets us up for 2013, where mm-hmm. we've got all kinds of legal battles against DOMA going on that might make their way up to the Supreme Court for a hearing. You've got other states that might come online with marriage equality. We could see it in California and Rhode Island and some other places by the time 2013 draws to a close. It's fascinating to watch this stuff. And what's your view of the legal cases that are kind of working their way through?
Well, I think it's really important for folks to realize that, you know, regardless of how the legal cases turn out, you know, even if DOMA is repealed, it doesn't immediately pass marriage equality
right.
in all 50 states. Marriage has always been an issue that the states have defined. So all it would mean is that states would now be free to define marriage as they see fit, and they would be hopefully recognized in state to state, depending on how it's ruled. But, you know, there's the case, there's the Prop 8 case, which if it's ruled in our favor, would apply just to California. You've got Edie Windsor's case out of my home state of New York. She's a longtime volunteer at Marriage Equality USA. Her wife of 40 years passed away, and the government hit her with almost $500,000 tax bill that no heterosexual married couple would even have to think about or worried about. So, obviously, you know, rooting for her. We've got another case out of California, another case out of Massachusetts, and they're all being decided in our favor. You know, they're looking at this and saying that it's
by,
just not right.
By judges that were appointed by
Republicans
Bill
and Democrats.
Clinton, George W. Bush, George H.W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, and even Barack Obama.
Absolutely. And you've got Prop 8 being argued by, you know, David Boies and Ted Olson, you know, two opposite ends of the spectrum as well, as we remember very well back in 2000.
Right. The pair that tangled over Bush v. Gore
yes.
Is fighting for marriage equality in the Prop 8 case. And you never know what these decisions might be. I mean, if there's anything that we know now after watching this last session of the Supreme Court is that anything can happen. If you get Chief Justice Roberts writing the majority opinion to uphold President Obama's signature piece of legislation to provide health care to every American, who knows what these decisions might be. You mentioned Proposition 8. If they go in our favor, all likelihood it will just apply to California, but it could apply to more. It could apply to less. I mean, you never know.
You never know with judges sometimes.
This is
why it's important that, you know, there's a judicial track in this fight. There's a legislative track. There's an education track. You know, we're not putting all of our eggs in one basket.
Nor should we. Brian Silva, the executive director of Marriage Equality USA and somebody I've known since we were both heterosexual and 16 years of age, when he was a Democrat and I was a Republican. We all experiment in our youth, so I did it with politics. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Carl.
You can do what you can to support groups like Marriage Equality USA. Go to his website, marriageequality.org. All righty, folks. I want to thank everyone here on Team Hartman for another great show. Tom leaves big shoes to fill, and Sean, Shano, Jim, and Paul always make my turns behind Tom's microphone a delight. As always, you can stay connected with me when I'm not filling in for Tom. Visit my website, carlfrisch.com, and sign up for my email list for updates. You can also connect with me on Facebook and Twitter at Carl Frisch. That's K-A-R-L-F-R-I-S-C-H. Tomorrow, the Tom Hartman Program returns with more stimulating talk radio and great guests discussing the 2012 election and all the news you need to know. In the meantime, get out there, get active, and make your voice heard.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.